I want to know your worst Valentine's Day ever stories.
I don't even have one. My husband and I are high school sweethearts. Literally, I met him when I was 15. He was 17. He went off to the military after he graduated. I was still in school. We got married 2 months after I turned 18. We've been married for 26 years. And literally, Valentine's Day is like his worst nightmare. Yeah, he's like, we don't do Valentine's Day. He just feels like that's just too much pressure. And he's nice to me like throughout the year. So he's like, why do I have to just do it on that day? I do it when I want to.
Right.
And it's better that way. I kind of dig that. But
I dig that too. My husband is sort of the same philosophy. Valentine's Day is every day, but we're newlyweds. So that'll maybe calm down a little bit with time. I don't really have a really horrible Valentine's Day either experience that I can think of. Maybe it's because I've blocked them out of my memory and tried to just move on with my life. I honestly don't have one. Really
Most
boring.
People don't. Yeah, if you don't like Valentine's Day, it's usually because you don't have somebody. But I say that's the day you go out with all your girlfriends and, you know, have drinks and just be like,
Galentine's Day?
Yeah. I like that.
I hadn't heard of that. That's great.
Hello and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the Western United States. Our funding comes from Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio. I'm Sarah Aronson. Today, my guests are Jennifer Ryan and Kristen Proby, two highly successful romance novelists who joined us as part of the 2017 Montana Book Festival. In this special, they'll keep me on my toes as we wrestle with topics such as the genre's critics, male vulnerability, and the importance of naming characters. This conversation contains adult language and themes. Listener discretion is advised.
How did each of you come into the genre? And first, I will introduce you, Jennifer Ryan and Kristen Proby. Romance novels. How?
Romance novels have been a part of my life since I was quite young. My mom was a reader when I was a teenager, actually probably my whole life, but I really noticed when I was a teenager. And I've always been a reader. I've always been a writer. And I started reading romance as a teenager. And I knew by the time I was 22 that I was going to write romance. I've been writing. That was when I wrote my first romance novel at 22. I'm now 42. So it's been a long love affair with the genre. I can't imagine not reading and writing in this world. It's just wonderful.
Kristen, I just want to follow up and ask, what was the first romance novel you fell in love with?
I don't remember the exact book. Nora Roberts has been a staple in my life forever and a day. I've had the privilege of signing with her at her bookstore, and that was like a bucket list moment that I might have cried a lot after, because it's like, what did I just do? I just signed books with Nora Roberts. Yeah, I remember reading her and other authors such as Susan Mallory and Jude Devereaux and other icons in the industry.
All right, Jennifer, what about you? How did you come into this?
Kristen and I need to be best friends, so.
Maybe we now are.
We might be. Same thing. My mother was an avid reader of romance, and she loved suspense novels, too, written by men, and Robert Ludlum was one of her favorites. But she was always reading these romance novels, and I didn't really pay that much attention when I was in high school, and I think it was probably about the time I went to college where I was just like, you know, what are you reading over there? And she'd be like, you got to read this Nora Roberts book, because she read every single one of them. So I kind of started with that. I tend to go more the suspense side of, romantic suspense. I love a nice little suspense plot in there and, all the danger and, you know, will they get together or will somebody die? And, of course, it's a romance, so you always get a happy ever after, which I loved. It was like, yeah, they've got to get together. I fell for Julie Carwood and Sandra Brown and all of those novels. So I came to writing much later. I was an avid reader for years and years and years with my kids at home, you know, being a stay-at-home mom, my kids. And then I was pregnant with my daughter. My husband was traveling a lot. He was in China. And I was like, you know, I really have this story in my head. I was always in my head. If I didn't finish a book, I would finish it in my head and then read it and be like, oh, I was pretty close, or my version was better. I wish it had gone this way. So I was like, maybe I'll try writing a book. So while he was gone, I was like, well, nobody will know. He's not here. Nobody will know if I can't do it. So I wrote that book, and that was Saved by the Rancher, which was the first book I ever published. But in between writing that book and then actually getting an agent and publishing, I just kept writing. And so by the time I got an agent, I had 18 novels finished. I just started and I couldn't stop. And I was like, I love this. This is everything to me. Mm-hmm. At the time, too, I went back to work. My kids had gotten older and I went back to work. And then it came to a point where I was writing full time and working full time. And my husband was like, pick one. He's like, you love writing. Just do that. Mm-hmm. So I was like,
that's a good
husband.
I'm going to
do. He is.
So let's just address the critics right off the bat. What do you say to people who think romance novels are, you know, lightweight literature?
I say you probably have never read one. And I don't know how somebody can dismiss an entire genre that sells more books than any other genre. And I don't know why somebody would say it's light or fluffy or just, you know, that you can't write a book as well as a master thriller writer or something. You can get all of that in a romance novel. I think romance novels offer so much more than just the love story. It's the human experience that we all have. We all want to meet somebody. We want to fall in love. We want to be treated right. We want to be respected. And I think we give that to every reader. And I think there's nothing wrong with knowing going in that no matter what happens to your characters, they're going to get a happy ending. Mm-hmm. And you get to leave on a high note and feel good about it at the end.
No, I agree. Adding to that with the human experience, you know, there are friendships and families, children in these books. It's not just a fluffy, let's have sex now experience. And I think that that's something that women really relate to. They want to be friends with these people. My readers say all the time, I want to be part of that family. I want to be her best friend. It's not just about the relationship between the man and the woman. And certainly the people who do well in this genre are just good writers, regardless of what genre they're writing in. I get so worked up about the whole, you write porn, you write mommy porn, or if my husband and I are in the same place together speaking with friends who mean well, but they'll look at him and say, oh, are you the inspiration for those parts? Wink, wink. And I'm like, okay, disrespect me by talking about what I do for a living and disrespect my husband at the same time because it's really all about him. Clearly, it's sad, but if it was men writing these,
right,
would not be treated the same way.
Kristen, one of the things I appreciated about your book was the strength of the female characters. Mm-hmm. And there's sort of another side. There's a dark side to some of the women in your book. But I want to stay with these female entrepreneurs. What's the genesis of those women? And why was it important for you to have strong female leads?
It's important in all my books. It's not just this series. It's definitely one of the threads in my stories that always the woman is strong on her own. That no man ever completes her, but rather compliments her. And she knows at this moment in her life that that is her truth and that she's just excited that she's found a guy who respects and compliments her. Because as a woman, I also want that. And I want to write about women who I want to be friends with. I don't want to read about someone that I don't respect as a person or that I don't identify with at all or that I wouldn't look up to as a friend. So always, it was never a question in my head. Always when I'm coming up with these characters, they're always independently strong. I think that's important to put out there, especially because a lot of our readers are young. And for them to read that, oh, she's a business owner, she's successful all by herself, no man helped her get there, I think that's really important.
The other thing that was curious to me about your book was the lead female name is Riley, which is a gender-neutral name. Was that intentional?
No, I just liked it.
Okay.
Yeah.
The names are the hardest.
Really?
For me, I don't know about you. I spend more time coming up with the names of the characters than writing the first chapter. It's like, it's crazy, the naming. It's like naming your children because it has to be right. The name has to, like, you know, mean something for the character. Like, Riley's a really strong name and... Yeah, so.
Okay, so let's talk about your lead male character and his various names.
Beck Trigger Cook. So Beck is an undercover DEA agent, and his undercover name is Trigger because he's a dead shot. So you'd never want to go up against him, and it just tells you exactly kind of who he is.
Like, but it's very sexy.
It's very. I loved it. He actually appeared in an earlier book in the Montana Man series, the Stone Cold Cowboy book. And as soon as I kind of wrote him and gave him that name, I was just, oh, it's one of those moments where as an author where you're like, you're so getting a book. He was already taught, like, I was already spinning on the other story trying to finish writing Stone Cold Cowboy. It was one of those perfect things that happens. And the names, like I said, are always hard. But as soon as I was like, his name is Trigger, and that's just, he's all tattooed. He's this really tough DEA guy. But when you meet him in Escape to You, he's at his lowest point. He's broken. He's damaged. He's just been shot. He just killed somebody, an innocent woman who accidentally got in the way. He didn't mean to. And he is just at his lowest, lowest point. And so I just thought it was really interesting to write a character who was at his lowest point, who has a name like Trigger, and that's how he identifies himself as. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm Trigger, I'm this guy, and he's kind of at this place where I don't know what to do right now because I can't be that guy anymore.
So let's talk about male vulnerability in the romance novel.
I love doing that. I've done a character like Trigger. This is the second time I've done that, where I've started the character off at a really low point. And the other one was in Lucky Like Us, in my Hunted series books, and he was an FBI agent, and things had fallen apart. And I think it's interesting to think that these guys, like cops, DEA agents, people who are, you know, firemen, anybody who has to like put their life on the line all the time, they can't always be that tough guy. And so I'm always interested in, like, well, what are they really like at home? What's the other side of that?
Which brings me to Kristen's book. Trevor, one of the themes is his relationship to video gaming, which I was like, is this sexy? Can you get away with this? And what I love is that part of the dialogue is, this is who I am.
Yeah.
Will this woman accept me? Can she respect my interests and values? Where did that come from for you?
Oh, my husband.
Okay.
Yeah. So my husband is a gamer and has been for a really, really long time. And so when I met him, since he was 8 years old, he's been playing video games. He's certainly not one of those weird guys that lives in his mom's basement with his blanket up around his head and he's in a dark room. Like, that's not it at all. But he loves video games, and he and his best friend, who also has been his best friend since he was a small child, lives in his hometown in Colorado. We live in Montana, and that's a great way for him to connect with his friend and chat. And he has friends that he's met in various gaming situations for many years that live all over the world. And so I was like, that's actually a really interesting plot point for me. I think, you know, not all men are, I don't watch television. I only like work out.
Yeah.
Right. Or what have you. Men are all different, just like women. So about 2 years ago, right after I'd met him, I put it out on social media. What do you guys think of a geekier kind of hero who's still quite alpha, still quite strong and protective and all of those things, but has geekier interests like Star Wars? And the readers went crazy for it. They were like, I think that's fantastic. That would be a lot of fun. And I think it's sexy when a guy loves Star Wars or whatever it was. And so I was like, all right, well, we're going to give you one.
If you're just joining us, you've been listening to a conversation with Kristen Proby and Jennifer Ryan about their careers as romance novelists. I'm Sarah Aronson. This is The Right Question. Our full conversation can be found online at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. In the next segment, Kristen and Jennifer will read from their work and we'll talk seriously about feminism.
So it's interesting because as I'm sitting with both of you, there is a lot of group dynamics in your book, Kristen, and I'm thinking about the internal worlds in your book, Jennifer, where you have this female celebrity and sort of what she's going through internally about what it means to be at a low point. And then, you know, and this hero who's also at a low point, this solo man. And so there's just these kind of these individuals out in the wilderness.
It is. For Trigger and Ashley, who's the celebrity, she's a mega movie star. She's been missing for a year. Trigger finds her in the middle of his property, doesn't know how she got there. She's at the lowest point. She has spent the last year playing a character for her kidnapper to save her life. And he's been playing a character to save his life in his daily job. And so you've got two people who come together at the lowest point of their lives who've been playing other people and have to figure out how to be themselves again and also be with each other and forge this relationship. She's counting on him to save her from this madman who's after her, but he's counting on her to kind of save him in a way, to allow him to be his true self and not be Trigger anymore. She's counting on him as a DH and then just a man.
Which I think is fascinating, because when you take off all the plaid flannel and the beards and the, you know, jewels and the ball gowns, isn't that what love is?
Exactly. These are two people who, when they come together, they've stripped themselves of what they do for a living and are just like these bare souls there, broken and trying to put themselves back together as just who they are. And she can't imagine really going back to Hollywood yet. He can't imagine going back to work. But yet there's danger still lurking and they still have to be strong and rise above. There's a scene in the book that I really love. She's in the hospital and he's there and she's talking to a psychiatrist and she says, you know, you're broken, he's broken. How can you guys, this isn't going to work. And she says, well, maybe all a broken soul needs is another broken soul to look at you and see you for who you are. And that's enough. And you can't hide. All the flaws are out there and he sees me and I see him and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I think that's true. It's like if you can really look at somebody, that's I think what the basis of a real love is.
Absolutely.
You can look at somebody for all of who they are, their flaws, everything, and still be like, I love you, then that's a romance that will last.
Mm-hmm. Will you take us to the moment of their first kiss?
It's their almost first kiss.
Okay, they're almost.
In my books, you know, everybody's in so much danger.
You make us wait for it.
Yeah. Well, and these are two people who are so at the depths. They needed that time to kind of come together. And so, but they have these really lovely moments. So this is one of their moments. It starts with Ashley. Beck, she stared in amazement at his transformation. He'd shaved the beard and cut his thick, long hair short along the sides and back, leaving it longer on top to fall back in a soft wave. He slid his hand along his bare jaw and up along the side of his head. It's been a while since my face saw the sun. The hair wasn't easy to cut with the clippers, but it's a hell of a lot better than having it falling in my face all the time. She didn't know what to say. She'd never seen a more handsome, rugged man in her life. Those penetrating gray-blue eyes stared at her. At first she was tongue-tied, then words tumbled out her mouth before she thought of them. You're gorgeous. So much so that her stomach fluttered and her fingers tingled with the desire to reach out and touch his strong jaw and slide through his thick, silky hair. His eyes narrowed, then dipped, scanning down her face and body, all the way to her toes and back up, leaving a trail of heat in their wake. Beck reached out, took the side of her face in his big hand, and swept his thumb over her cheek. If you keep looking at me like that, I'm going to have to. The alarm went off, buzzing incessantly, cutting off whatever Beck intended to say and her hope that he meant to kiss her. After all she'd been through, she couldn't believe her mind and heart reached out to Beck in that way, but she craved his touch and the sweetness and light it shined into her desperate heart. For a split second there, she'd felt like a real person again, a woman, not some possession. Beck swore, gave her one long, regret-filled look, then went to the coffee table, picked up the remote, shut off the alarm, and changed the channel to check the cameras. Ashley gasped. The unfamiliar white truck made her heart thunder. Someone's here. Her voice cracked, fear clogging her throat. Adam bounded off the couch and ran to her, wrapping his little arms around her hips. She held him close, looking from the front door to the back for a means of escape. Beck closed the distance between them in a few long strides. With Adam between them, he cupped her face and made her look up at him. It's my brother. You're safe. Don't bolt. A trace of a plea sounded in his deep voice, despite the order in his eyes. With his hands on her face, the warmth from his palms sinking into her skin, the total awareness she had of him this close, she couldn't do anything but fall further into the depths of his eyes that convinced her he'd protect her no matter what. The urge to run dissipated, but the frantic need to hide lingered in her gut. The knock on the front door made her jump. Beck held on to her, leaned in with his cheek pressed to hers, and whispered in her ear, "No one will ever hurt you again and get away with it." His lips pressed to her temple in a soft kiss, then he let her go all at once, turned, and walked to open the door for his brother.
And we should say that Adam is?
Adam is the child that she rescues from the same man who kidnapped her. So, yeah, you get to learn more about him in the book.
Let's talk about the crazies in your books.
Crazies are fun to write.
Crazies are fun to write. Yeah. They're my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also hard because you kind of have to get in that headspace, especially in my books, of being this really dastardly villain. And my book doesn't start off, Ashley has been kidnapped. She's in the home. She is desperate to escape. But at the same time, she's come to this point where she knows the only way out is to do exactly what he says and knowing that he's going to kill her. And she's about to give in and he makes a mistake. But this guy is, he's just pure evil.
Right. Your book starts at a very high pitch of drama. How do you get into the headspace?
A lot of times I save those scenes and I do them all at once because once I'm in that headspace, it's kind of hard to jump around to her head. She's in such a dark place. He's such a dark character. So I kind of just live in that space for a little while and I'll write the scene through. And I usually make it as bad as I possibly can. And then I leave it to my editor to tell me, you've really gone too far here, Jen. This is really dark. And they're pretty good about that, but they leave a lot of the stuff in that I come up with. I always think when you're going to write somebody who's kidnapped somebody and held them for that long, they've got to be a really twisted, twisted person.
And Kristen, your crazies show up as these crazy ex-girlfriends, wives.
Yeah.
In this book.
Sometimes ex-husbands, sometimes. Yeah, in this book it is an ex-wife and a friend.
Right.
Who he just thought was a online friend who turns out to be a little crazy. I love writing the crazy. I think it's hilarious. I think it's fun because I'm not crazy, so I can pretend. Well, we think we're pretending. I don't know. The dark is fun to write because it's always a happily ever after. And there is a lot of love and fun and humor in all of the books. The dark for mine is very small. I'm not super angsty in my writing, and I like it that way. But the little bit of angst that I include is fun to do, probably because I don't write it very much. I don't write a ton of angst into the books.
Kristen, will you read a section from your book?
Sure. This is actually early on in the book. Riley is on a date. And it's comically horrible. So I'm going to start there. Wow, you haven't changed at all, Dave says as he sits across the table from me. I wish I could say the same about him. Dave and I dated for 2 years in high school, and he's recently moved back to town. He called last week, and we set the date for tonight. But Dave has done nothing but change. In high school, he was a jock, tall and built, with dark blonde hair and a killer smile. And now he's lost a good portion of his hair. He's let himself go, and his smile just looks smarmy. Thanks, I reply, and take a big sip of my wine. What have you been up to? Well, I lived in the San Francisco area for a while. Oh, I sit back as the waitress delivers my food and wait for Dave to keep talking. Maybe if we eat really fast, this date will be over sooner rather than later. My biggest regret is that I let him pick me up, so I'll have to ride back from downtown Portland to my house with him as well. I know better than that. Yep, I was down there for about 8 years, had 3 kids. Really? So you got married? I take a bite of broccoli, but can't actually taste anything, so I set my fork back on my plate. Well, the third baby's mama talked me into marrying her, but that's not working out. He shrugs, and I'm taken totally aback. So you're still married? Yeah, he says, as if he's telling me that he put gas in his car before he picked me up. But man, she's a bitch. So you're going through a divorce. He shifts in his seat and won't meet my eyes now. I'm sorry, Dave. I misunderstood when you talked last week. I thought this was a date. I laugh and take another sip of my wine, relieved. But I can quickly switch to friend zone mode. No, he shakes his head. This is a date. I wanted to see you. I narrow my eyes and suddenly have a very bad feeling for what's about to go down. You're married. He brushes that off. I just need to tell her I want the divorce. I moved back up here like I told you over the phone. I'm staying with mom and dad for a while because I'm still looking for a job, and all three baby mamas think I'm made of money or something, always wanting money. Now my jaw tightens and hands clench in my lap. I heard that you've done well for yourself with that porn restaurant. I'm quite sure my eyes are going to pop out of my head. And to be honest, I need someone who can help me out. I need to be with a girl who has her shit together, you know? Because you're a colossal shit show. But I don't say anything quite yet. I just sit back and wait for him to finish his spiel about how he's lonely and needs $9,000, as if I have $9,000 to give him. Finally, unable to listen to him anymore, I hold up my hand to stop him. Stop talking. I take another sip of wine. I'm really a great guy. I mean, you know that. Shut up. You're a great guy? I wear heels bigger than your dick. He blinks fast, clearly shocked by that statement. But I'm just getting started.
What do you know about bad dates?
I know a lot about bad dates. A lot of the bad dates that are in The Beauty of Us actually happened probably to me. Mm-hmm. I dated for a while before I met my husband. A lot of first dates, hardly ever a second date. I never had a Dave where it was like a previous boyfriend or anything. But a lot of strangers who, gosh, it's just slim pickings out there.
Do you feel responsible culturally to entertain any kind of dialogue about gender, politics, power?
Kristen actually has a great line in The Beauty of Us where she addresses this a little bit and says, maybe I'm not a feminist if I expect a guy to be polite and kind. I'm paraphrasing here, but be polite, kind, you know, open the door, be a good guy, and I can't still have a great job, support myself, and have everything that I want too. Like, why do you have to turn in your feminist card if you right. want both? And why can't you have both? Just because you have a woman who wants a guy who's going to open the door for them, but still be like, maybe that door is for them to walk into the boardroom, which I did in one of my books. And she was walked into the boardroom to like lay down the law to these people. Mm-hmm. And he was like, go do your thing. You know, I think you can have a strong enough guy who's a big alpha guy who can still look at the woman in his life and be like, you got this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Go for it.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for Sarah.
Yeah.
In reading these books, did you feel like you were uncomfortable or compromising your ethics?
There were moments when I was like, I don't identify or I don't want to identify, or I could feel that internal resistance, which I was like, what? What conversation am I having with whom about what? And I was just wondering, like, yeah, if you guys as authors feel responsible for like shifting a dialogue about romance and gender roles or not.
Well, I guess my response to that would be, but isn't that what entertainment is for? You don't always agree with every movie you watch or every television show. I watch Will and Grace and I love it. I'm not gay. So I guess I think that's fantastic that you had that response while reading my book, because your life experience is not the same as mine or those of my characters. It's not my job to make you understand where the character is coming from, but maybe to just read it and have a response to it.
Jennifer Ryan is the author of the Montana Heat series and joined us from California. Kristen Proby is the author of the Fusion series and lives here in Montana. Look for more information about each of them and their numerous publications at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting us since 2008. And thanks to you for listening. I'm Sarah Aronson, and this has been The Right Question.
The Right Question is produced by Sarah Aronson, Beth Ann Austin's studio engineer and production assistant. You'll find links to our podcast and Facebook page at mtpr.org.